So as we begin the series, we're basically encountering God in Advent. Advent is this picture of this coming arrival of someone famous that you're expecting, that you're looking forward to, and we think about that being Jesus. Well, crazy thing happened, and not Jesus, but 20 years ago, I was in this small town serving as a summer youth intern when we got word that our little theater, our little community theater, was going to be host to a former president of the United States. Big deal, okay? They came in and they had all these people come and like check the place, check the town downtown and examine everything and make sure it was going to be safe for this president and his wife to come. And he came and I got to meet Mr. Jimmy Carter, right? You guys are like, who is that? Yeah, he was president and he likes peanuts and so do I. Anyways, I like to boil them. Anybody ever had boiled peanuts? Can I get a witness? Come with it, man. I don't know why we don't have boiled peanuts around. Anyways, that's another story. So I got to meet Jimmy Carter and his wife, Rosalind. They were amazing, and that's the deal. So we waited, anticipated. They had Secret Service with them, which I didn't realize that Secret Service stay with presidents until they die, which was really cool. And also their family member, their spouse, until they die. And these guys are sitting there talking in their sleeves right in front of me. It was super cool to meet Jimmy Carter. So that's my claim. It's all I've done. And just the anticipation. Well, here's the thing. We get caught up oftentimes in anticipating some things in our life. I remember as a kid, it was looking forward to Christmas Day, right? Hoping that somehow or another, beyond my parents' bank account, would be some kind of gifts. If I would just wish hard enough, dream big enough, somehow or another, under the tree at home, there would be gifts that somehow or another my parents did not purchase. And that kept disappointing. Right? And then there were a variety of things. I remember for some reason all the way through school, and even though I kind of really liked ninth grade a whole lot, it still happened every night before the first day of school. I would stay up really late and wake up really early because I anticipated it so much, the coming of that first day and how everything was going to be. See, the nation of Israel had gotten caught up. They had gotten basically duped and tricked by a variety of things that basically promised something big, but only failed them in the end. We were different pieces of the same darkness. And we're going to talk about that. So if you have your Bibles, if you would turn with me to Isaiah chapter 8, we're going to read the latter part of that and then jump into chapter 9. Isaiah 8, verse 21. It says, they will pass through the land, greatly distressed and hungry. And when they are hungry, they will be enraged and will speak contemptuously against their king and their God. It will turn their faces upward, and they will look to the earth, but behold, distress and darkness, the gloom of anguish. And they will be thrust into thick darkness. What had happened as a nation, God had delivered them, had provided for them so many times that they had kind of got like used to it. That's what God does. He shows himself favorably to us. And instead of them clinging and being grateful for his providence and the ways that he's shown love to them, they kind of got used to it and calloused to it, and they kind of rejected it. And so instead of them clinging to, looking forward to the things of God, they begin to cling to things on earth. So they had begun to seek out for themselves spiritual leaders, necromancers, people to come in and sorcerers to do all these things to teach them stuff instead of seeking the one true God. Well, what happens, and you can attest to this, is there's one thing to look for and anticipate light. There's another thing to just look for lighter shades of the same darkness. And many of us, we settle our hearts on lighter shades of the same darkness. And it isn't light, and it isn't promised to be light. But we look for the lighter shades. And so they were getting angry and enraged because they had famine, and they were hungry, and they were blaming and angry with their king, and they became angry with their God. And they were thrust. Notice the phrase in the last part of verse 22, thrust into thick darkness. Well, beginning in verse or chapter 9, verse 1, gives a transition. It says, but there will be no gloom for her who was in anguish. And so there's this hopeful transition, this axis point, this hinge from all the things that are dark to something basically anticipatory that they're looking forward to. It says, but there will be no gloom for her who was in anguish. In the former time, he brought into contempt the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. But in their latter time, he has made glorious the way of the sea, the land beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the nations. And so here he's speaking of a context for them. I don't know if you know this or not, but the different prophets we have, Isaiah, Joel, different ones, they wrote to different parts of the nation of Israel. What had happened is after Solomon, there became a split in the nation, a divide between the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. Well, Isaiah's primary responsibility and call was to minister to the southern kingdom, to prophesy to the southern kingdom. But here he's referencing something that happened to the northern kingdom, where they were defeated by the Assyrians at Zebulun and Naphtali, where they came in and basically took them into exile, before the exile that we usually talk about with the southern kingdom, into Babylon. Well, they were defeated, and he speaks of this time, but he says there's going to be no gloom. There's going to be a redemptive thing that happens. But notice how it happens. It says, beyond the land, or the land beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the nations. Not this incredible fortress palace place like Jerusalem, but Galilee. We know later, Jesus had a ministry there. And so with that in mind, keep reading in chapter 9, verse 2, it says, the people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. The people who walked in darkness, who settled themselves and all they wanted was lighter shades of the same darkness. They had walked in darkness, but something happened. They have seen a great light, something hopeful or silver lining, something took place. It says, those who dwelt in the land of deep darkness, on them has light shine. And so there's this prophetic word of something coming, a light to come to dispel and defeat the darkness. There's something to look forward to in the midst of their gloom and anguish. It says, you have multiplied the nation. You have increased its joy. They rejoice before you. So there's this worship that takes place as a result of this light that's coming to them. And notice it says, as with joy at the harvest. And so that's a contrast to them being in famine, then being hungry. They're going to rejoice before God, rejoice before this light, because something's happening to deliver them. As they are glad when they divide the spoil. For the yoke, listen to this, for the yoke of his burden and the staff for his shoulder, the rod of his oppressor, you have broken as on the day of Midian. And so you see these three things that the oppressors, the Assyrians, had come and done to them. And ultimately, what's going to happen from the Babylonians to the southern kingdom, there's going to be some oppression that takes place. But notice these three forms of oppression. In verse 4, the yoke of his burden, there's going to be basically a weight on them of oppression. A staff, like this guiding, controlling thing over his shoulder. And the rod, the thing that beats us, this rod beating them. But notice what this light is doing, this light that's coming into the darkness. For you have broken as on the day of Midian. And so sometimes when we read a text and we don't know the words and the terms, sometimes we don't know what's the comparison that the writer is given. And the comparison here with Midian, if you remember the story of Gideon, Gideon defeated the Midianites. But remember how he did it. He was called of God to defeat them. But notice Gideon wasn't a mighty warrior, even though his name says so. His name means mighty warrior, but he wasn't valiant. In fact, when God called him, he was sitting there threshing wheat on a wine press because the enemies would expect him to be at a threshing floor, but because he was afraid, he would do it at the wine press. So God calls him, and he says, I want you to lead my people, and you're going to go defeat the Midianites. But you're not going to do it with the 32,000 men you think. Are the 10,000 that's left, you're going to defeat them with 300 men. And you're going to defeat all 135,000 of the Midianites. All of them. And so this comparison that's here in Isaiah is that the one who's going to break the oppression, the yoke on their shoulders and the rod on their shoulders, the one who's going to do that is going to do it the same way he did it with 300 men over 135,000. He's going to do it in a way that you least expect it. And notice how that is. It says, for every boot of the tramping warrior in battle tumult, and every garment rolled in blood, and it's the blood of the innocent, will be burned as fuel for the fire. This something's coming, and this is how it's done. This is how the yoke that is broke. This is how the staff is broke. This is how the rod that's beating from the oppressors is broke. It's broke in verse 6. It's not done through a mighty warrior. It's not done through an incredible political king or leader. For unto us a child is born. The way that God would deliver them from the burden on their back, the way that God would break the work of the oppressor is through a child. Imagine for them. The hope that they would want would be some incredibly tall, handsome, muscular man riding on an incredible horse, wielding a really big sword. But he comes as a baby. A baby who's dependent on his mother. A baby. And this is the story of this baby. It says, to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder. So think about this. The descriptions that are given here is that the government, not the normal government like we would have with the three branches and a president and a vice president and a cabinet, and we're sitting here after this election and you're like, it's too soon. It's way too soon to talk about this. But for us to see that this is an eternal government, an eternal kingdom that's looking forward to, that this child will take on his shoulders. The child is carrying this. And the name of this child, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor. You see, they had been settling for all these lighter shades of the same darkness and the wisdom that the lighter shades of the same darkness kept bringing. You know, every truth is truth if it's what you believe, right? Whatever your truth is, it's moral relativism. It's if it's good for you, it's good for you. That's fine. We can agree to disagree. There's no central truth. But see, here's a wonderful counselor who comes in and says, no, there's one truth, and it's found in me. He's the wonderful counselor who's not going to let you settle for something other than him. And it's a child. Who's the wonderful counselor, the one who comes in peace and in grace and says, hey, I want to give you the way that will transform your life. And then notice he also comes as a wonderful counselor, but he also comes as a mighty God who will defend you and defeat your enemies, who will come in and guard you and protect you with his wisdom. He's a mighty God. And notice these are descriptions of this beautiful child. This little son who's going to defeat the oppressors, defeat the people, and break the rods that had been beating you before. And this phrase, everlasting Father. Many of us in this room have what we would consider really, really good fathers. Some of us had some fathers that if there were a way to like give them all that they deserved of being great, you would give it to them. And then some of us, we didn't have that. Some of us had fathers that really, that oppression thing, that rod that you just spoke of, that's all they knew. But each of them, whether the good father or the bad father, they will die. But you need to know that there is an everlasting Father. There is one who will come who will not wear out. He is eternal. And he is the light in the darkness. And that's this child. So notice these descriptions so far. Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father. And notice this one, Prince of Peace. Think of the other things that you could put after Prince of. You could Prince of Handsomeness. But what's handsomeness going to do at transforming you, right? Prince of Incredible Wealth. But that only satisfies for a moment. The thing that transforms the darkest of times, the thing that we need in every conflict in our life is peace. And that's what he is. That's what he brings. In the conflict between us and God, our sin and his holiness, the only thing that can reconcile us is the Prince of Peace. And that's what this child is. He's the Prince of Peace. He's the only thing that settles our souls. It's in this child. And notice in verse 7, of the increase of his government and of, and of the increase of his government and of peace, there will be no end. This eternal kingdom that this child is bringing eternal peace, peace that's transformative, that rights wrongs, that comes in and brings light in dark places. In fact, what he does is he turns our conflict into peace, our loss into abundance, our despair into joy, and our darkness into light. And this is eternal, this child brings. It says, on the throne of David and over his kingdom to establish it and to uphold it. You see, David was given a prophecy, a promise, a covenant of God that his eternal, his kingdom would be eternal. It would be forever. But it wasn't happening through David directly. It was through his line. And it would come to the person and work of Jesus Christ himself. And David just kind of became like a little awesome gift to him, but he's nothing more than a footnote compared to the gift that would come from him in Jesus. To establish it, speaking of this kingdom, to establish it and to uphold it. And this is what he does it with justice and with righteousness, with justice and with righteousness. We know that there's injustice today. There are people who are struggling and suffering today that need the hope of the gospel that we hold dear. And he's going to lead with justice and with righteousness from this time forth and forevermore. But this last sentence, it sunk deep with me. Let me read it to you. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will do this. You know, we use the word zeal usually confined to the church atmosphere, right? We kind of say, okay, zeal. Okay, that person was a zealot. That person was full of zeal. Sometimes we use it normally if we want to sound cool. But here we need to see this. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will do this. The word zeal here, I don't know if you've ever heard it. I've only heard it from one person, and so it may not be a common thing. But apparently in the 8 o'clock service, they had no idea what I was talking about. And those are the wise people in there. And so you may have not heard of it either. I guess that was implying something. Anyways, when someone says that you're making me red, you ever heard that? Two of you. Awesome. A redhead girl told me that. Me and Aaron were joking with her, and I kind of kept joking, prodding a little too much. She says, Lewis, you're making me red. And I was like, what does that mean? Basically, the blood is rushing to her face, and her face is getting flushed, and she's mad at me. She's passionately mad at me because I was jabbing her a little too much. So that picture of zeal and passion is what's in play here. You want to know what's going to break the yoke of the oppressor? What's going to snap the staff of the one who's trying to control you from the outside? You want to know what's going to like break into pieces the rod that's been beating you? You want to know what it is? It's a child. And the passion of the Lord is what's going to make it happen. The righteous anger of the Lord is going to come in and bring it, and he's going to do it through gentleness. the gentleness of a child. That's how it's going to go down. So I ask you, what are your substitutes? What are your lighter shades of the same darkness? Where are you looking for hope in dark places? Is it you're depending on your spouse to be that for you when they were never meant to be that for you? They don't have the capacity to do that. Only Christ does. Are you looking for your children to be that hopeful transition for your life because your childhood was so bad and so you want to live vicariously through them? Maybe it's in your job you're trying this. And you're thinking, if I could just work hard enough, if I can get promoted enough, then I could feel a sense of a lift of this darkness, this fog that I've been swimming in for so long. Maybe it's in money or in your health, and you've been basically depending your life, living, banking it all on a lighter shade of the same darkness. And I want you to see this. This is our thought for today. It's simple, crazy simple. Jesus is the light that dispels the darkness. It's not found in your spouse. It's not found in your children. It's not found in your job, your health, or money, or any reputation that you can ever conjure up for yourself. It's only found in Jesus. If you want light in the darkness, it's only in Jesus. Everything else is temporal. Everything else will leave you hanging. But Jesus, he's the child. He's the child who will break the yoke of the oppressor. He's the one that shatters the rod that has been beating you down. It's Jesus. And so today it's kind of a simple invitation. It's not one where you have to come to the front and kneel and pray. It's just one where you can just sit for a moment and say, God, you are this good to me. And you did it in a way that I least expected it. You didn't come riding on an incredible horse. You didn't come doing these things through an intelligent leader or some scientist. You came as a child to save me, to ransom me. And you are the wonderful counselor. You are the mighty God. You are the everlasting Father. You are the Prince of Peace. And you came as a baby. So as we celebrate Advent, the coming of Jesus, we want to do this with a heart that is really looking forward to him coming. So I want to invite you during this time just to prepare your hearts in that way over this Advent season, that you would stop getting caught up in the trappings of Christmas and Cyber Monday and reeling from, you know, Thanksgiving and Black Friday, and you would say, you know what? The thing that matters more than anything is me looking forward to the one who's already come. Let me pray for us.